Well, as most of you already know by now, a fragile situation already in Afghanistan has been made considerably more complicated by the reaction to the destruction of some holy Qurans and other religious texts by U.S. military personnel at Bagram Air Base last week. Violence since the incident came to light has claimed 40 lives, including four U.S. soldiers. A presidential apology for the action of the soldiers at Bagram has failed to immediately settle things down, even as it underscores what is at stake for the Obama administration in seeing a peaceful transition out of Afghanistan. For more on all this, we're joined by P.J. Crowley, professor at Penn State Dickinson School of Law and School of International Affairs, and former Department of State spokesperson. P.J. Crowley, welcome to the program.
A pleasure, John.
And we're also joined in the studio by Imam Johari Abdul Malik, who's director of the Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in the D.C. area. Imam, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin with you, Imam, with a very basic question. Now, I don't want to get into what the motivations were of the U.S. soldiers, what their excuse was, what the various explanations have been. But in your line of work, in your holy calling, shall we say, what is done with old holy books, old holy Qurans? How do you deal with the, and I'm not saying there is anything appropriate about what they did in Bagram, but you, this issue must come up. What is the practice, the protocol?
Well, you know, first, John, the thing that I think is important to posit first in this discussion is that we should not be, as the United States government, in the business of figuring out how to dispose of holy records. What we need to do is to reach out to the people, the imams and so on in Afghanistan and say, we have some sacred texts. We're going to give them to you and you guys do with them whatever you do.
So that clearly would have solved all of the problem here.
I don't know if it would have solved all of the problem, but at least it would be somebody else's problem.
In your particular, local Islamic center, I mean, you know, books wear out, things wear out. What is the practice? Because in Jewish temples, of course, dealing with the Torah is a very big issue. You don't just, you know, toss these things out in the dumpster.
Indeed. The most commonly accepted approach to destroying these materials is by burning. But other traditions may say burial. And so you get into an issue where you have to decide for those people, what is the best way? I think this would be a situation, in some respects, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. It's better to allow the others to lead in their own cultural context while you navigate your other issues. Let me probably add one more piece, and that is a perception in Afghanistan that after 50 years of occupation with the Russians, who were actively trying to make them atheist.
Right.
They have a psyche that any invader, occupier, foreign military force is coming to do what the Russians did.
So is a threat to Islam. And you have experienced this firsthand in Afghanistan, even with all of the sort of good faith efforts on the part of General Petraeus and others in Afghanistan, people are inclined in Afghanistan to assume that the NATO forces and the U.S. forces are a threat to Islam.
Indeed. But again, this is from their own cultural framework. In America now, we are still sort of recovering from the post-Vietnam thinking, and the Vietnam era wasn't that long. They had 50 years of this occupation.
Interesting. We're talking with Imam Johari Abdul Malik, director of the Al-Ahshara Islamic Center in the D.C. area. Also with us is P.J. Crowley, professor at Penn State Dickinson School of Law and School of International Affairs and former Department of State spokesperson. P.J., how complicated is this sort of thing, and how much of a setback do you think it represents for U.S. forces in Afghanistan?
Well, obviously we see, you know, the impact that it has had in Afghanistan. The Taliban is taking advantage of that. Obviously, it had called publicly for retribution, and we saw yesterday the attack on a NATO outpost, killing a number of Afghan citizens. And I think it does, as the Imam said, royal questions about the sustainability of the operation both in Afghanistan and also in the United States. This was kind of fragile support after 10 years of a NATO presence there. To pick up on what the Imam said, which is very, very interesting, I think it is actually fairly remarkable up to this moment, that given the Afghan tradition, suspicion of a foreign presence and foreign influence, you know, that actually public opinion has been broadly supportive of the international presence for this long. But I think clearly we're reaching the point, if we haven't already, where we're wearing out our welcome.
Well, let's talk for a moment about a piece that was in the National Review yesterday. It was posted online yesterday, a very prominent piece, suggesting that under no circumstances should the U.S. have apologized for this action, that the asymmetry of the reaction, 40 dead, four American soldiers dead, in no sense calls for a presidential apology. How are such decisions made, P.J. Crowley, and what do you think?
Well, I think, the President Obama, from the beginning of his administration and with the Cairo speech in June of 2009, was trying to reset perceptions between the United States and the Islamic world. So I think that from the president right down to, General John Allen, the commander of forces in Afghanistan, recognized right away how potentially inflammatory the burning of the Quran was going to be. Obviously, the unrest has affirmed that judgment. And so I think the apology was quite necessary. Yes.
That's P.J. Crowley. Imam, we'll give you the last word in this segment.
UPF put together a film, the data from the Gallup poll, saying that what a billion Muslims think about the West. And the big issue is that it's not modernity, it's not their religion, it's an issue of being disrespected. And so the Quran, in this case, is a proxy for if you disrespect the Quran, you disrespect us.
Although you would say with other Islamic clergy that the desecration of the Quran doesn't call for killing as a retribution, right?
This violence, and probably we can put this in another context. When Martin Luther King was assassinated, as a man who won the Nobel Peace Prize, who was an advocate for nonviolence, people were rioting because he was a symbol of their freedom.
Indeed.
And so it's not justified in any way.
The proxy point, though, is a very, very good one. Imam Johari Abdul Malik, director of the Al-Ahijra Islamic Center in the D.C. area, thanks so much for being with us. Also, P.J. Crowley has joined us, former State Department spokesman.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
We're going to spend a couple more minutes with P.J. Crowley, professor at Penn State Dickinson School of Law and School of International Affairs, former Department of State spokesperson. We're talking Afghanistan this morning on The Takeaway. P.J. Crowley, the imam made a really interesting point in the last segment, and that is that you really need to take, number one, the long view in Afghanistan, and beware these proxy symbols that can produce so much violence. In practice, how do you, negotiate such a landscape?
Well, what's interesting there is that the fact that the good news here, if there is good news, is that the issue has obviously taken off in Afghanistan, but not so much in other parts of the world. And so that does say that the Quran burning is a concern of itself to Afghan citizens, but it's a proxy for something else. And that really is the fact that we've been in Afghanistan for 10 years. Progress has been made, but we're reaching the point where we've done about as much as we can given the level of support for foreign presence in Afghanistan. And I do worry that in the United States, as we suggested at the end of the last segment, when your friends start turning their guns on you, the potential for a significant drop-off in public support in this country is there. And I think about how we just ended the situation in Iraq is very instructive. The United States wanted to have a long-term presence. Iraq was willing to consider that, but the politics on both sides prevented a long-term agreement on terms that were acceptable to Iraq and the United States, and so all forces are out of Afghanistan. The real concern here is there are genuinely important reasons why the United States has to stay past 2014. In Afghanistan, you're able to continue to operate against extremists there. But most importantly, it gives you a position where you can continue to reduce the problem next door in Pakistan, which is far more significant than what we see in Afghanistan.
And
so the real challenge here.
Let's hold on.
Yeah, the real challenge
point.
Here is by if we don't manage the short term, we lose the long term.
Well, let's hold on that for a second, because Afghanistan is valuable, and this is how it's different from Iraq. Afghanistan is really a much safer, even given this violence, base of operations for U.S. forces in South Asia in Afghanistan than Pakistan is. Even though Pakistan is more strategically significant, it's much easier to operate out of Afghanistan. It's far too sensitive to do that in Pakistan. So we really need to maintain a presence in Afghanistan based on the strategy of the Obama administration.
That's right. And so if the Obama administration and the Karzai government, if one or both fail to manage this challenge or underestimate the impact of what we've seen here, then we do potentially lose that long-term presence in Afghanistan, obviously at a much lower level, shift from combat forces to special operations forces who can continue to operate without creating the friction that we've seen recently with the Afghan population.
At the center of this latest violence, of course, the Quran, a text. And as they say, there's text and there's subtext. But in this particular case, I'm wondering if there's pretext. Is the Taliban really using this as an opportunity, even in the midst of peace talks that are going on in Qatar? Are they using this to make advances on the ground?
Well, the talks in Qatar are talks about talks. What the United States wants to see is talks between the Taliban and Afghanistan. They had showed some promise, but clearly, in the short term, the Taliban is trying to exploit this situation to obviously create conditions that are more favorable to the Taliban if negotiations do go forward in the future.
Let me ask you a question that I posed to a former ambassador to the UK from Pakistan who spoke on the program yesterday. And that is, given everything that's happened from, the fatwa of Salman Rushdie, where a reference to Muhammad in his novel, The Satanic Verses, produced repercussions throughout the world and caused him to go into hiding for years, and everything that we've dealt with since 9/11, Abu Ghraib, the various sorts of desecration stories that have popped up here and there, how does something like the burning of some Qurans at Bagram Air Base even happen, P.J. Crowley?
Well, that's a regrettable aspect, because less than a year ago we had that situation here in the United States where Pastor Terry Jones, an obscure cleric in Florida, tried the Quran, and then burned the Quran and created very significant reaction, but most significantly in Afghanistan. It is an ongoing process. If the military is now putting together a training program for anyone in country, and I presume it will extend to anyone who comes into Afghanistan going forward. But in light of what happened a year ago or further back, we should have had that program in place now. So it really is an inexplicable error by the military. It has had an effect, and we obviously need to learn from this. And as General Allen said the other day, make sure it doesn't happen again.
Finally, is the fact that we have to reiterate this point, write it down, make sure it's posted on the wall, does that suggest that for as long as we've been in Afghanistan, and this is the longest U.S. war, that U.S. forces are still extraordinarily and dangerously detached from the culture of the place where they reside, Afghanistan?
Well, what it means is that this is a different kind of war. It's not about raw military power. It's about ultimately what people think and how they act on those thoughts. And so as the current military doctrine says, you've got to apply military force in very judicious ways, and you've got to be conscious of the broader environment. And unfortunately, in this last few days, we forgot that.
And, the imam speaking earlier, talking about how even for clergy, Muslim clergy, it's a sensitive matter to dispose of Quran. So the idea that this would have been just dealt with in such a haphazard manner just seems to really have been a sort of stepping on a rake, a mistake that did not need to happen. P.J. Crowley, thanks so much for being with us.
A pleasure, John.
P.J. Crowley is professor at Penn State Dickinson School of Law and School of International Affairs. He's a former Department of State spokesperson. What do you think? An apology from the president on this issue of the destruction of holy Qurans in Afghanistan and all the violence that's ensued. Was it appropriate, or do you think there should have been some other approach? Give us your view at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.